All right, so why don't you tell us a little bit about In the Kingdom of Ice. This is what you're going to be reading from and talking about the process of writing it on Thursday. So tell us a little bit about Kingdom of Ice.
Yeah, it's a work in progress. I'm about three quarters of the way through it. It's a book about the first American attempt on the North Pole. It's an obscure, now obscure, although at the time it was a national sensation, international sensation. It was a group of 33 men who went through the Bering Strait trying to sail to the North Pole, based on some pretty wacky, what we now consider wacky science, but was actually cutting-edge science of its day, that said that if you could find one of these portals that supposedly existed, that you could finally break through the ice fairly easily and sail to the open polar sea, as it was called. This was a wide belief at the time that the pole was covered by a warm body of water. And
really? Like underneath the ice there was some kind of warm sea underneath it.
Yeah, and that you eventually get to open water. And once you get to open water, it's easy sailing to the North Pole.
The portals are weak points in the ice?
The theory was that they're, you know, like the Gulf Stream on the Atlantic side, there was also another current on the Pacific side. And the idea was that this warm current turned the ice to slush and created a soft, what they call a thermometric gateway to the open polar sea.
Thermometric gateway.
And this was a theory that has roots that go back to the Greeks and the Vikings. And it's one of these obviously wrong concepts that we couldn't shake from our geography and from our imagination about what was up there. But, you know, it's almost impossible for us now to remember and recognize how obsessed people were with the not knowing what was up there, having to know what was up there. And it was just, you know, one of those obsessive compulsive things that the leading nations of the world were engaged in. And the United States came up with this idea, and it was run by the U.S. Navy and staffed by Navy officers, but it was all paid for by a fabulously wealthy and extremely eccentric newspaper publisher named James Gordon Bennett, who was the owner and publisher and editor of the New York Herald, which had only a few years earlier sent Stanley to find Livingston in Africa. And he'd had such a success with that, sort of like a stunt. I mean, actually, Livingston was not lost. He did not need to be found. But it worked, sold millions of newspapers, and he was trying to kind of concoct an encore to Stanley Livingston, and decided to completely fund this expedition, bought the ship, the USS Jeannette, and they left from San Francisco, went through Bering Strait, did find that warm current, but it petered out. They ended up locked in the ice, as everyone does when they get to about the 80th parallel.
Sure.
And they drifted for 2 years in the ice. The vessel had been reinforced for the ice with all kinds of iron, but it eventually succumbed to the pressure, was crushed, sank on the ice cap, not very far particularly from the North Pole. It was kind of generally heading in the right direction.
Really?
Now you got 33 men and their dogs out on the ice cap with some belongings and some small boats that they have to drag to the nearest landmass, which is about 1,000 miles away, which is the very middle of Siberia, the Arctic coast of Siberia. And they start walking. And in some ways, that's sort of where the story begins. It's like, how do they make it home? It's sort of a Shackleton adventure story, except it's 35 years before Shackleton. It's the North Pole, not the South, and it's an American expedition, not British. But it's a survival story, you know, in a kind of a two-fisted He-Man Outside magazine kind of story, which is my background. I was an editor at Outside for years and years and still write for them.
How did you find the story?
You know, this is one of those stories that's kind of in that sweet spot that I am always looking for and usually do not succeed in finding, which is nonfiction writers, they either have to write about Lincoln. You know, let's write another book about Lincoln. You know, there's about 300 published every year, but you know there's a market for it. Or you write about something that's never been written about but is so obscure no one gives a damn. You know, they just don't care. This is sort of in that sweet spot, I feel, of an important story, a consequential story in its day, a story that matters, has great characters, but is not very well known for some combination of reasons. I found out about it because I got an assignment for National Geographic magazine to write about a very influential and eminent explorer named Fridtjof Nansen, who was a Norwegian explorer who tried to duplicate the voyage of the USS Jeannette, but in a better, stronger boat.
Right.
He was basically saying, well, you know, they almost made it to the North Pole. What if we design the boat differently and try to replicate this mission, get ourselves locked in the ice, drift and see where we lead. Well, that's what he did. It was almost successful. All of his men made it back, but he did not bag the North Pole. But he went on to become a very famous person and a Nobel Peace Prize laureate and everything else. But, you know, I was reading the documents, and I was like, you know, I'm trying to duplicate the USS Jeannette, that American voyage that you, of course, all know about. And I'd never heard of it. I ask around. Friends of mine who are editors or adventure writers, you know, never heard of this story. And I dug into the literature and found out there was just reams and reams and reams of personal testimony. And there was a naval inquiry. There were memoirs and diaries and journals. So there was plenty of raw material to try to recreate this epic voyage, which it didn't go very well, as most of these things don't go very well. 13 men made it home. But everything.
13 out of 33?
Yes, 13 out of 33. And of course, like most of these stories, you, if it was a movie, the tagline on it would be something like, they went north and then everything went south. Yeah. And then everything you can imagine. It's just harrowing, horrific kind of survival circumstances that they're living under.
Can you say a little bit about your method as a writer? I've read you describe it as bringing the tools of a novelist to history. And having a concern with narrative, having a concern with character, sticking close to the facts. How do you, when you come upon a story like this, how do you start? Where does it go? At what point do you begin writing?
Well, I have a tendency to over-research, and I usually stop researching when my editor calls and says, you know, it's code blue. You know, this is serious. It's, you know, the gun is to my head, and,
right.
and it's time to start writing. Because the research is the fun part, you know. The research is where the excitement is. And by research, I don't just mean archival research, but traveling. You know, I went to Siberia last summer. I spent a month there. I retraced a lot of this voyage. So, yeah, I think that part of the research is the fun part. You know, then you do have to finally sit down and start distilling and boiling it down. And that's obviously not quite as fun. It's challenging. It's wonderful. But it's hard, especially when you're dealing with a subject. Because my background really is journalism. And, you know, I'm used to picking up the phone when I don't understand something and calling somebody and interviewing them. In this case, you can't really do that. You know, they're all good and dead and buried in ice in some cases. And you don't have that lifeline anymore. And it's why I have such a respect for strictly archival documentary historians who can only work with written documents. It's really hard.